order the utilities and environment committee meeting. The time is 6:33. In attendance are myself, Brian McCann, Chair, Katie Capellini, Mark Fry, Patrick Richardson, here in council. We have Doug Hamm and Mary Westfall on Zoom. Is... And here in attendance also is the mayor and Kevin Aller, Leslie Tynan, Chuck Silvernail, and a couple of guests that we'll have. Oh, and also, I'm sorry. Bill Sanford and a couple of guests that will be speaking to one of the items on the agenda. The first being water rate changes, and then the Eldon ditch drainage area, and then investing in solar energy generation. Kevin Aller is present. He will be leading the discussion for the water and sewer rate changes. Kevin, I'll give it to you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. McCann. The proposals that we've put together have been for a 65 cents per 1,000 gallon increase on the sewer side and 33 cents per 1,000 gallon decrease on the water side. There will probably be, I'm anticipating fewer questions on the water side than the sewer side. So I thought I would handle the water side first and kind of explain that. As those of you that have been on council for a few years, several years, a couple of years back, we did 20% increases for 2 years in a row. That was in anticipation of needing some upfront money, if you will, for engineering and design of a possible new water source if we chose to go a step away from the city of Toledo. That decision has not been made, obviously. We'll be with the city of Toledo, and so we can start normalizing those water rates, if you will, as we go on here. The 33 cents per 1,000 gallon decrease that we're recommending, in the sheet that I handed out to you that has the blue cross, if you will, on it, blue being for water, shows that with the capital improvements that we have coming up, we will be operating on a deficit and deficit. But because of the steps that we took for those increases, we build up a rather healthy reserve in that water account. And even with those operating deficits that we have over the 5 years, we will still end up with a reserve balance in excess of about $2.5 million. That balance right now is sitting at $6 million. You can imagine, had we decided to take the steps to go to a different water source, that $6 million would have been needed plus many more millions to be able to accomplish that. But now that's not needed, so we're able to start using those funds and start giving that back through rate decreases like this back to the residents of the city. So I think I believe that even with the annual deficits that we see here, ending up in 2025 with in excess of $2.5 million is still a very healthy reserve for the water fund, and that would be my recommendation. If you take a look at the expenses in the top part of the sheet, you can see that really the water expenses are very consistent, very uniform. About the only thing that changes in there is the capital outlay, and that's just going to depend on what projects we have coming up. Our water system is in very good shape. We have just a couple water mains that we see a higher number of water main breaks that we are anticipating replacing over the next few years. One of the questions that Mr. Fry posed was, you know, how does the Monroe Street Interchange project affect the water and sewer lines at all? It's not a big impact. We have a short section of water main that runs between Monroe Street and the northern part of Alexis Road that will, it's actually one of the problem mains. So we anticipated having to replace that anyways. And we just kind of, set that off knowing that the interchange project is coming up, so we're going to do it at the same time. But as a direct result of the interchange, we don't have any impact on that. So that's the water side. We're very healthy there, and I don't think the changes that we're recommending here will change that. I think we'll continue. All right. I'll move on to the sewer side. And one of the things that we did during those years I talked about where we were making those 20% increases on the water side is we obviously wanted to try to hold that sewer side pretty steady. Because 20% increases over 2 years, you know, 2 years in a row, you know, really amounts to really close to a 50% increase to our residents on the water side. So we really tried to hold that sewer side steady so that we weren't impacting the residents, you know, even more so with increases on the sewer side. That has kind of caught up with us now. We've had a couple of years. I gave you the 2020 budget figures, but in the spreadsheet that I had and that I worked from, if you go back to 2017, there was about a $250,000 a year increase in the operating expenses for the water resource recovery facility at Lucas County that we're a part of. It held steady for 2018, it actually dropped down a little bit, but then in 2019 it jumped another $150,000. That $400,000 increase plus or minus is really, you know, it's hit the sewer pump pretty heavy. And that fund is at a, while we're very healthy on the water side, we're not very healthy on the sewer side, and we really need to get those reserves built back up. Hence the recommendation for a 65% increase, which is really almost a 20% increase on the sanitary sewer side of our rates. Our sanitary sewer rates are very low compared to others in the area. Even with this increase, if it were approved, that would take us to $3.89 per 1,000 gallons. Maumee and Perrysburg are at $7.60 and $9.11 respectively. So we're still very low compared to area municipalities. Two things that are really causing the necessary increase. Those operating expenses that I've already mentioned at the water resource recovery facility, and then large capital outlay projects that are coming up. If you take a look in 2021 on line 6 of capital outlay, we started with some big numbers. We go from, you know, the 2020 budget of $30,000 to $1.7 million. The following year is $2.1 million. Both of those projects are the large diameter sanitary sewer lining project that we have going on, phases 1 and 2 of that project. The first phase is about $1.65 million, and the second phase is at right at $2 million. It's just under $2 million for the second phase. Both of those projects we've already applied for OPWC funding and were successful. So ultimately, half of those funds will come back to us, but the other half we do have to finance through Ohio Water Development Authority loans. So, from the expense side, you'll see in line 6 the $1.7 million for that project. We have a couple small. But then if you go down to line 16 under miscellaneous revenue, that's where the grant and the loan comes from. So even though we have $1.7 million of expenses, we have $1.7 million in revenue. So those essentially by the end of the year that we have washed and are taken care of. Now, what does continue to carry over for years, you know, for about 20 years, is the debt service on that OWBA. So that's also, we looked at 2022, $2 million. The following year, in 2023, we have a sanitary sewer lateral replacement program on Main Street between 10 Mile Creek and Convent. That project has to be done in advance of a reconstruction project that we have on Main Street that will be done in 2024. That is an ODOT funded project, but we have to get the sanitary sewer work done in advance of that so that we don't affect that project schedule. So those three projects, that project is estimated anywhere from $800,000 to $1 million, or $800,000 to $1 million. We're working on that estimate right now and doing some cost comparisons of some materials and methods. So those three projects, you know, we're putting, you know, in excess of $4 million into our sanitary sewer assets over the course of the next 3 years, 2021, 2022, and 2023. The debt for those three projects will carry on. That's approximately a $175,000 annual debt payment that will be made, you know, for the next 20 years with the other GA loan. So that debt payment is factored into, I have that in for the next 12 years. We did mention down below, we offset with the revenue from the grant and the loans that are coming in. We're recommending that the rates be effective September 25th. What that means is that basically the readings that our utilities department take each month happen on about the 24th or 25th. It varies depending on the calendar and things of that nature. But it'll happen on the 24th or 25th. That billing will still be under the old rate system. So September 25th, 24th or 25th, there's going to be a reading payment. Any water used during the previous 30 days will be billed under the old rates. And then when the next reading is taken in October 24th or 25th, that will be under the new rate system. So the effective date is September 25th, but people won't actually see any increase until October.
So all of your projections are with this rate in effect for September 25th.
That's correct. One of the questions that Mr. Fry had is if you take a look at line 9 on the sewer side, it's showing the 2020 budget is the revenue is being $2.4 million. And then we're only showing the revenue in 2021 to be 2.429. It's only a $29,000 increase. What I did for 21, 2.4 is what we had in the budget. And so I kept the budget numbers consistent. We're showing that our income is probably going to be about 2.2 million.
Something like that.
Yeah. So for 21, I adjusted based on actual conditions versus projected.
Right.
So, that's how I'm still a little conservative on that. It's not a straight 20% increase because I took a look at some flow figures from the plant, but that's why it's only at 29,000.
But it's volume driven.
It's volume driven.
So if there's more water, there's more sewer, and vice versa, the opposite way.
Yes. The sewer is a little more consistent than water because you don't, the summer watering season.
Yeah, it does summer increase.
Yeah.
Very correct.
Right. So that's why we're seeing that we're probably going to be about $2.2 million on the revenue side versus the $2.4 that was originally budgeted. We're also seeing a corresponding decrease on the expense side as well. So I think from a end of the year status, I think we're going to be very similar to what we are right now with our balance. Our reserve balance at the beginning of this year was about $340,000. And I think we'll end this year very close to that. We're going to be on a break even through this year. So. Because one of the things that we have is we have 4 months of revenue left, but only one quarterly bill coming from the wastewater treatment plant. So we're a month ahead on that.
I didn't know there was a quarterly bill. Thank you.
Yes.
That was the piece of the puzzle I was missing.
Yeah. We have one quarterly bill coming. We have an extra month of service. We're also, some of the debt that we had anticipated and put into the expense side, did not hit this year. The county didn't get some of those, some of the project closings completed in the time frame that we originally thought. And so those debt payments won't hit until next year. So we're about $100,000 to the good on debt payments. So because of those things, we're going to end up very close to what we anticipated as a net impact on the budget. So. Another question that was asked is the kind of contract reimbursement, what's that consist of? The majority of the funds there are, we have an agreement, the pumping station that's on Sylvania Avenue, right across from Mayaconda, that is our pumping station, but it takes sewage flow from a pretty large service area of the Lucas County sewer service. And so our agreement with them is on a flow proportion basis, they pay a share of that, the operation cost of that pumping station. So they're actually about 80% of the flow to that station, but it's still our station, so they pay the majority of that. So that's what that is. That will also be, we're working through agreements right now because the sanitary engineer is actually doing one project of the trunk sewer downstream. Per agreement, we will be paying a portion of that. The lining project that we're doing, they will pay a portion of that. We're trying to, we're working right now through numbers to try to get those to kind of offset. There's no sense in us writing a check, them writing a check, and that kind of stuff. So we're working. I think that's about it. I can answer any questions. I know that's a lot of information. I look at these numbers every day, and you don't have that benefit, but able to answer any questions that you might have.
Kevin, a couple questions. The OWDA debt, what's the interest rate on that?
It's roughly about 2.2. It varies every month, but 2.12 was the previous month's rate, and that's what I've used for our debt payments. I did an amortization schedule, so that's what I've used. It could be different, 7 months from now.
Yeah. And just out of curiosity, are there fees attached to that? Because oftentimes if we floated our own debt, there would be fees that are attached to that. Are there fees attached to that? Or is this just we go and we get the loan? Is there any question that we're going to get the loan?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really a good program. The only downside to OWDA loans, and at 2.12 is not really a downside, but 20 years ago, when I started in this world, the interest rates at that time were like 12-13%. An OWDA loan, you're locked in for 20 years. You can't refinance it. You can't pay it off early. You can't. It's 20 years. Well, when 13% started dropping down to 7%, everybody wanted to refinance. You just didn't have that option. At 2.1%, that would be an issue.
Right. And with the lining projects that you've talked about, with our current sewer for those parts that we're going to line, do we have significant water infiltration from storm water that come into those main lines, not through like the normal collection process, but from a, just the line is there, it's an old concrete pipe that was put in X number of years ago. We have water that flows through after the rainstorm. Do we have much of that?
Yeah, we are, especially when we have the high rains or a wet spring, we do see our flows increase to the wastewater treatment. I mean, there are times where our flows will double and almost triple over what we consider normal. The lining project along that trunk will definitely help and remove that. We are also something that we purchased probably about 4 years ago now, as part of our operations, were a couple flow meters that we can pop in any place around the city. And we started kind of chasing the inflow and infiltration in our system. Start trying to identify, we put them at 4 locations, see what the flow does during the high rain event. This one doesn't change too much, then we know we don't have a real big problem there. This one, our flow increases a lot, then we go back another section, we go back 2 more manholes and extend it. So we're trying to chase that down. But definitely, when you're talking, you know, 42 inch up to, 24 inch up to 42 inch pipe, that's a lot of joint area. And a lot of it's in the middle of mucky, runny sand. So it's a wet groundwater, high water table. And so it'll definitely help that situation.
So in your estimation, that would be a material reduction in flow,
yeah,
at least for portions of the year when we have spring rains and what have you.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a payback relative to the debt service at some level. It may not be one-to-one, but it would be material reduction in those charges.
Yeah, because you're still going to have, you're sort of, you know, the laterals that come in are still going to be
sure,
the leakies and that kind of stuff. So, but it'll definitely help the situation.
But you slay dragons before you stick toes.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
I did have a couple follow-up questions on the 22, 20 out years.
Mm-hmm.
Those increases, and I know the answer to the question, but I'm going to put it on the record anyways. That's not under consideration today, is that correct?
That's correct. Okay. All we're dealing with today is the initial increase of 65 cents. We are taking a look at, you know, these are projections. We do have some projects that we're still kind of working on the cost estimates that they come in less and that kind of stuff. But I just wanted to kind of put that out there on the horizon that, you know, we may be maybe back asking for some increases in the future.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions?
So I have a quick question, Kevin. So on the water side, does that mean that in December of 2021 there's a 3% decrease? I'm sorry. Thank you. I got it. Answer my question.
Okay. And we're, you know, I mentioned earlier, we're at about $12.15, I think. On a combined basis, if you take a look at our water and sewer. Again, the two communities that I mentioned earlier, they're at $16 and $18, respectively. So, you know, not that just because you're lower than somebody else means you're doing a better job, but we really work hard to keep those rates. We understand that, you know, any kind of increase impacts the pocketbook of the residents. And we work hard to try to keep those low, but at the same time, we do have ongoing regulations that have to be maintained. It's always the phosphorus concerns that everybody's dealing with now, you know, with Lake Erie, that has a big, huge impact on the water resource recovery. So those regulations get tighter, just it costs more. We fit that plan for the basic adjustments.
In between the proposed water reduction and the sewer increase, the net is about a buck and a half a month, buck 60 a month?
Buck 77.
Thank you.
For the average household, insulin. So.
Kevin, if I may, Sylvania used to have a reputation of having extremely high water rates, well deserved, but because of the new water contract, we've been able to reduce that down. Our sanitary sewer rates are lower. And if you take a look at the city of Toledo utility bills, where they add in a stormwater utility and also charge everybody for trash removal, I believe, our utility bills are on the same level as theirs overall. And if you go out into Sylvania Township, into the Lucas County system, we're in some ways better off. Mm-hmm. So we have over the years, we've been able to counteract what was a reality in the past of very high water rates to, we're not so bad anymore.
And our systems are in very good shape, very good condition. We're doing a nice job. So even the line project, even though it's, you know, a total of, you know, about $3.5 million, that's really the first money that's gone into those the larger bills in 4 years. I'm not condemning anybody for that in the past. That's just the way it is. And through sewers, you know, they'll function for a very long time with really very low money. But we're at that point now.
Thank you for that. Kevin, since there is a second item, we hope to address that at this time about the discussion on the Alton ditch drainage area. Mm-hmm. If you could speak to that.
Yeah, I provided a memo that we actually put this information together as when we were looking at doing, requesting some engineering study on this. And since 1965, that the Elvin Ditch drainage area has been looked at really about five times over the course of what would be 55 years. So about every 10 or 15 years, it seems like it crops up. Each of those times, you know, there was some work done, whether it be a little bit of a study or a little bit of design. But then nothing ever moved forward. It was always a funding issue. It will be the project that has been proposed in the past will be a pretty hefty price tag. What we're doing with this study is really taking, and we've asked to take a look at it and say, is that old design the best option, or can we do something different and alleviate the issue? So, I won't go through all of these items, but if you look in the mid-80s, I believe it is, that's when some residents came to council and said, and started asking council to finally do something. And if you take a look at that, the people that are involved in that are trailer driving here. Really more, a little more towards the low end. They're not on the extreme low end, but a little more towards the low end. And then in 83, nothing was really done. They did a report, they applied for some OPWC funding, but weren't successful, so it just kind of got shelved. And then in the mid-90s, then there's information to show that our sewer department did some things on the low end of Elden Ditch, but it's not really documented what was done. It wasn't a full scale project. There weren't any changes made to Atlas sheets or anything like that. So we don't have a good record of what was done at that time. There were only one or two employees that were even here in the sewer department at that time. We remember being down there, but we don't really, their members just not certain. At that time, the complaints from, prior to that time were more towards the loan. Now the complaints that we're getting today and where the water is set is on the height of the system. It's in the Memorial Park area of the drainage area. Our thought is that whatever was done in the mid-90s alleviated the problem for the people that were having it at that time. But now it's moved up to the Memorial Park area. So that's why we want to take a look at the new plan. We'd like to have a study done and have that study tell us exactly what needs to be done. And then go back, get a cost estimate of what to do with it. You can apply for OPWC funds. This would be a project where people are getting, if it does come back that it needs to be enclosed, that would be something that people are getting that they didn't have before. So the potential is there to assess a portion of it, not all of it. Those kinds of things will come back to you once we know what the study says. We've gotten the study. We initially were working with Northwest Consultants. They have since been purchased by Fishbeck Thompson Carr Huber, who did a water study. And so Fishbeck provided a proposal of $28,970 to perform that study. That will take a look at everything. The drainage area for this actually comes from Michigan, comes down Memorial Highway, crosses underneath the railroad tracks, comes through Memorial Park, north end of Memorial Park, and then kind of snakes its way through our residential area before it ultimately ends up down the Ten Mile Creek. So we had gotten that study. Our plan was, because we didn't have it, we didn't anticipated at the beginning of the year, our plan was to bring that in as a 2021 budget item and use the 503 fund to pay for that study. So I would anticipate that we would have that study back in the May-June time frame, and then that would give us time to still decide how to best handle it with OPWC funding or any other programs that might be available to us. That was the plan for it. It is a definite concern. The people up there have, it's legit. Sometimes there's not much that we can do. This was one that we need to look at and see what we can do and kind of try to fix it.
Thank you, Kevin. This is super helpful.
Sure.
When I talked to the Stiffs and they said 30 years, it's actually been 50. So, no, this is really great, and I can let them know about the study. And I, Brian, thanks for adding it. I just wanted everybody to know what was going on. Thank you.
Kevin, the OPWC that we did not get the last time, my recollection is when we work with another public agency, the scoring goes up and the odds of getting it. My recollection is that's owned by the Sylvania Schools. Would they be one of those entities that would qualify as a joint venture partner for something like this?
Yeah, they could. Yeah.
Okay.
They were willing to be partners in it.
Well, I mean, they just get flooded.
Yep.
It's, anybody that's ever tried to play a baseball game there after a rainstorm knows that that floods.
Yep.
So.
And I think too, I can't speak, back in the late 80s, early 90s when they went the OPWC route. That OPWC program has changed, light years since then. So storm projects do tend to score pretty well. So it'll just have to depend on how much we have to ask for and that kind of stuff.
Can't bill Michigan for this, can we?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I thought you were going to say, figured I'd just ask.
Didn't somebody suggest building a wall?
That's probably me too, Brian, but I don't think that's going to work either.
Kevin, your memo makes note of some ditch dumping. Are there any, is it being exasperated by people blocking the ditch with dumping or us not cleaning out vegetation or something like that?
It's not, I don't think it's being exasperated by it. We did have a couple of residents along there that were, you know, we had to do some education on proper disposal of grass clippings.
I assume that's what it was.
And stuff, so we had that stopped. I'll say we have it stopped, I may get a phone call tomorrow, but we haven't had that complaint or had been out there for a month.
I have another question about the OPWC. Like, when you apply for one of those, what's the normal timeframe? Like, I'm sure there's a queue.
Yeah, the projects that we apply for this fall will have to be completed by July of 23. So you're basically, because the grant funds will be available at the earliest July of 21, and then you have 2 years to complete that project. So
within 2 years. So 2 to 3 years after, say, the study's done in May, June, so 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
After that would be.
This would be a fall of 21 application. So you're looking at probably 23, 24, sometime in there.
But if we said we wanted to do this tonight, I'm not saying that, but if we did, the study still wouldn't be done until early 21. You're still going to be making an application in the fall of 21, correct?
Yeah.
So just the timing of the mechanisms that are available to us to help alleviate this issue kind of drives us to say we could do it in early 21 and still be ready to do a filing if we want to move forward with OPWC in the fall and next year, a year from now, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We will be, but doing the study today really isn't going to help a potential project time frame because I really want to see that OPWC money available. That could potentially be a 50% project.
And how much are we talking, like millions?
Yeah, the original project was enclosing a very long portion of the Almond Ridge. It would be in excess of $1 million. We're taking a look to see if it's just a matter of maybe changing some pipe sizes someplace, enclosing a portion. There's a portion of it that it has like a concrete channel with it. I would prefer to not enclose that because the flow characteristics are already pretty good. So those are the kinds of things that we'll be looking at as part of the study.
Okay.
If we can reduce that, maybe not have to do everything that 1970 or 80 study said that should be done. So, and it wasn't, when I call it a study, the information really, I wouldn't call it a study. I don't know that there was a lot of hydraulic study that went into it. I think it was, we have this pipe size available, we'll just start working from there rather than really looking how to handle it.
Okay.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Ken, would you like a motion on the proposed water decrease and sewer increase so that we can put this in front of council for this evening?
Yes, please.
Leslie, do we need these separate motions? Okay.
If we have to separate them.
Okay. So I'll make the motion then to approve the administration's recommendation on the water rate decrease and the sewer rate increase per the administration's recommendation.
Second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion opposed? Motion passes. Added to the agenda for this evening's council meeting. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. Now, do we have to do a separate one on the proposal for the study?
You're talking about solar?
No, for the...
No, that's next year.
Oh, couple later.
Okay, that's fine. So nothing needs to be done on that this evening, but information is helpful for the next time the issue comes up. The third item on the agenda is discuss discussion on investing in solar energy generation for the city. And who will be giving us more information on this? Leslie Bryan.
Mr. McCann, before Ms. Bryan starts, my ownership stake in Palmer Energy makes me in direct conflict on this, and I would request the ability to push back on the table.
Please put a motion for that.
I'll make a motion to allow Mr. Frye to push back for the discussion on solar energy.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, sir. Appreciate the update.
All right. I'm going to introduce Melissa and Ann from Palmer Energy. Melissa's going to give you a little bit of a background on the solar array option and a little bit of the history of the project, and then I can discuss a little bit of the specifics on the letter of intent that was emailed out last month. Thank you.
Melissa, if I can have your full name, please.
Yeah. My first name is Melissa, E-L-5-S-S-A, and my last name is Webby, W-E-B-N-E.
Thank you.
Is it all right with you if I remove my mask? Yes. Thank you. So my name is Melissa Webby. I'm a senior energy analyst at Palmer. And what we are bringing to you today is an evaluation of a solar energy purchasing opportunity. So for the last 5+ years, Palmer has been evaluating different types of solar projects amongst our clients that we work with, from private, commercial, and industrial users to our public entities, public schools, kind of all over the place in terms of size of consumers. And after evaluating behind the meter projects, we found that it became very difficult to find all the pieces that come together to make a project like that successful for our clients. So recently, we've started evaluating the potential of a utility scale solar project. After seeing some things that have gone in the state, specifically the city of Cincinnati, what we are looking to do is collectively put together our government entities, cities, townships, counties, through our partnerships with NOAC, the CCAM, and OML, the Ohio Municipal League, and County Commissioners Association of Ohio, to collectively put out for bid a utility scale solar project. So when we're talking utility scale solar, we're looking at this point, probably 300 to 400 megawatts, which is a very, very large scale project. Right now, the largest installed solar project in the state is the Bowling Green Solar Array. If you have seen that, it's about 20 megawatts. So we're talking quite a bit larger than that project. So mechanically, what would happen is we're looking for the city to sign a letter of intent, which would allow us to go out for bid. We already have about 50 signed LOIs from different counties and cities, townships. We have received a few others from NOAC communities, allowing us to include your load in that RFP. So what the letter of intent, and Leslie will talk more about this, we're looking at both your facilities load, though it is quite a bit smaller, and the largest portion would be the government aggregation load we go at, so your residents and small businesses. Just for comparison, your facilities that Palmer currently serves are about 1.8 million kilowatt hours a year. So pretty typical what we see for this size of city. Whereas your electric aggregation load is about 65 million kilowatt hours a year, so quite a bit more load-wise. So through the RFP process, we are looking to bid out only a portion of that load. So if you choose to do both your facilities and your aggregation load, which is what we would intend to do since Palmer works with you on both sides, is include that in this collective RFP, where we would be looking for solar developers to provide a price per kilowatt hour for installing this utility scale solar array. With that price, the utility scale array would be placed somewhere at the developer's recommendation in Ohio, and the energy produced by the solar array would be generated and put back into the grid. So you're probably asking, how does that come back to our consumers? How does that make a difference? So you're not putting a solar array on top of your roof or over at Veterans Memorial Park or something like that. So it might not be as visible, but you are providing a potentially green offer to your consumers, which is something that we've seen on our residents, our small businesses, our large businesses, our public entities has become a much more pertinent topic when we're talking about diversifying energy portfolios. And when we're looking at this bid, we're only talking about 25% of your energy needs. So if we look at it from a risk management standpoint, hedging a portion of your load for a longer term. So when we go out for bid and we're looking for the price per kilowatt hour from these developers, it would be something like a 20 to 30 year PPA price, essentially, where you're going to pay this price per kilowatt hour wholesale, so that's for four against you, for 25% of the load. And from the city standpoint, you're not investing capital in terms of putting money down to put an array up. It's kind of a financial transaction where we work with a third-party supplier to bake that into your electric bill that either comes to the city for your facilities or to residents or small businesses. Kind of similar to what we have with NOAC right now, the current NOAC deal that was just renewed back with June billing has an opt-in price of 4.8 cents, and that's for 25% solar. So it's, when it comes to the end user, there's no separate billing. It kind of looks the same on paper. For you, you're not paying a separate bill, anything like that. So we are going to do a collective RFP. Like I said, we already have about 40 or 50 LOIs. I just updated the sheet today. We have really a large array. We have some of our smallest Ohio counties up to some of our larger cities and entities who have signed up for both their facilities and their electric aggregations in their communities. So what Palmer would be doing, we are looking for a letter of intent, which basically allows us to include the city of Sylvania in that RFP process. When we talk about what that means in the end on paper, so we're looking for a price per kilowatt hour on wholesale electricity. So there are other things that get added into that to come to the end price on the customer's bill. This is just on the generation portion of consumers' bills. So by our estimates, it's a pretty small premium. I do have a savings analysis that we put together just to kind of give you an overview over a 20-year term. And you'll see when you get that paper. So what you're looking at is a snapshot over a 20-year term. You'll see in the first part we've got it separated by your electric aggregation and your facilities with the load numbers that I talked about. What we're comparing is a 3.75 cent solar number, and that is wholesale. And that's just kind of a target price based on what we're thinking would be potentially available based on what we know that's going on with the city of Cincinnati solar array and other projects that are going on in the state. So you'll see that in the end, if you look in the first bar on the right, it's a pretty small savings percentage, about 2.5% over the term. The first couple of years, it's going to be about a wash, maybe slightly negative, but over time, that $37.50 solar price or whatever it comes in at would be fixed over the entire term. So you're hedging about 25% of your electric needs over a long term, and that price is going to remain the same, whereas your other purchases are done through the contracting process and based on the wholesale electric market, which does change with any other commodity. We've used pretty conservative numbers in our analysis, accounting for inflation and things like that, but we expect it to be a relative, it's not going to make you rich, but it is providing a risk management strategy. It's providing a green pricing option, something for your facilities as a city and for your residents. The solar LOI has a target price in it. So basically, if we go out for bid and we don't get any pricing that's within that range, we hold off, we reevaluate maybe when it's a different time and the markets have changed. If the pricing comes in below that, then you're basically agreeing to good faith negotiations to do a potential deal. Before I go any further, are there any questions?
I think you're doing a good job explaining it. It gives us a stable rate for a period of time, possibility of that.
Yep. And by not hedging 100%, you're still leaving yourself open to opportunities if the market presents opportunities for purchasing on the regular electric market, the wholesale electric market that we do right now.
This is Doug Hamm. Who are among the 50 companies that, or the 50 other entities that have signed on?
Yes, so off the top of my head, the other NOAC communities that have completed a signed LOI are the City of Waterville and Lake Township. We are expecting a number more. We're kind of in the same position right now with the other communities where we're having these conversations and presenting in front of their councils as well, the LOI. So we're anticipating some other ones. We do have a number of counties. Palmer works with a number of counties through our CCAO partnership. So we already have relationships with a number of those counties, and just like we do with the city, we help consult on both their facilities and electric aggregations. So we've got anywhere from kind of your small counties that are a little more rural, up to some of the bigger counties, and that's all over the state. It's not centered on one area geographically.
Yeah, I think your list of participants is pretty impressive. I'd like to get some of that on the record, but particularly some of the counties.
I will look at my list. I don't have it in front of me, so I apologize. But I can get that information over to you once I get back to my computer.
I don't do anything without my computer, so I understand.
I like to consult with the list before I start saying stuff. but I can definitely get that over to you. And we're still going through this process with some of those communities as well. A lot of them are also in kind of the same position where their legal counsel or their prosecutors are doing the LOI document. But we've had a very overwhelmingly positive response, which we're very pleased with.
We'll look forward to that information provided by you sometime soon. And thank you for the presentation. And we'll look forward to considering.
Any other questions?
What is the time frame on something like this? When do we want the LOI by and all that?
So our hope for the LOI is as soon as possible, really, but our hope is to have the RFP out this fall. So I think right now our target is mid to late October, just for the RFP process. taxes, and that will take some time to get into the magnitude of what we're talking about. Once that RFP is issued and comes back, we will obviously have both written and oral presentation of the results for it. As far as construction goes, that becomes a little more dependent on what happens. Obviously, a lot can change depending on what happens politically with some of the different incentives or, obviously the things that change incentives to green energy or not. Right now, there are a number of steps prior to the construction process with the Ohio Power Siting Board. The interconnection, so we're talking about a lot of powers and making sure that it's safe and able to be done, so that will take some time as well. A lot of the work is kind of the upfront permitting and things like that versus the actual construction process.
Nice presentation, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. There's just a couple of additional things I wanted to point out specifically in the letter of intent. There is no financial commitment that we're required to spend $10,000 or $15,000 up front. This is just, will you participate as part of our general, the aggregation program that we've been doing actually since 2000. And as Melissa said, it's just 20 to 25% of the load that we would be looking to focus on solar. So if anyone has any questions, I know there's a lot of information. I know that you guys have the letter of intent there. If you want to think about it, and if you have any questions.
Did you distribute the letter of intent this evening, or did I miss it?
I'm sorry. I took a picture and sent it to you as well.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, I'd probably like to read it, but I think this is something we definitely
want to
do.
Right.
I'll say that.
I emailed it to the utility committee members, so.
Yeah,
I apologize.
Okay,
this is. What would the next steps for the committee be?
So, if you're generally in agreement, you can make a motion to recommend moving forward, or. It's really up to the committee to decide how you want to move forward. You can set another committee meeting. It's kind of up to you. I know Palmer does want to get the letters of intent back as soon as possible. We do meet again on the 21st. I'm sorry. Yeah, on the 21st. So I can do what it's kind of your call.
So,
well, I'm not a member of the committee, but of course I have a thought on this because that's what I do, of course. But I'd like to move forward with this. I'd like to at our next council meeting, I'd like to get the list of other participants, take a look at the letter of intent, and if the committee's comfortable, you know, look at some legislation for our next meeting. This on the word. Ben, I think this is, this is a good, it's an economic green energy opportunity that I think we need to take advantage of. And if I'm speaking out of turn because I'm not on one with the credit, I apologize. But shocking, those are my thoughts.
So do you need a motion?
Yeah.
So I'll make a motion that we ask the administration to prepare a letter of intent with legislation for our next council meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
And the meeting will be, unless there's any other questions or thoughts for the committee. The time is 7:32 for adjournment. Thank you.